Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 379 of the Roguecast, recorded July 12th, 2022. A, always, B, B.
All right, we are back. In case you were wondering, we did not stop doing the podcast with no warning whatsoever.
That said, we will be out next week once more.
Yes, next week. So, I caught COVID, and that screws everything up, because I'm the one who does all the recording editing.
Yep.
And so, I was out, and...
You're feeling better.
I'm feeling better, yes.
In fact, you have the strength of a Hercules.
Yes, I do. And then, next week, I will be out of town, so we won't have a podcast next week. But then, we should be back to normal, mostly.
Yeah.
But...
So don't panic.
As a result, we've got a bunch of news to talk about. We've got a bunch of comics to talk about.
We're going to talk about a trailer that has Snoop Dogg in it.
We're going to talk about a trailer with Snoop Dogg in it.
And vampires.
Yep. We are also probably going to talk about Nick and Dave saw Black Phone.
Yep.
And so we're gonna talk about that. And we're definitely going to try and do our spoiler review of Thor Love and Thunder, which we'll do at the very end. And before we do all that, I wanted to mention some of the games we got recently. I didn't necessarily get... I don't think I've got everything. I think I missed a couple weeks. But we did just get Tome of Heroes, which is the new book from Kobold Press. Those are the guys who do sort of the big 5th edition stuff. They do Vault of Magic and...
Yeah, basically alternate world setting stuff for D&D and, like, a bazillion... Really, like, beautifully illustrated, by the way, different but monsters and stuff like that. It's the monsters in particular, we've always said, was, like, a really cool thing to throw at your players if you don't want them to know... Like, everybody knows what a kobold does or a lich does or whatever... They're not going to know what these creatures do.
But they've also got... They have a couple world settings, Midgard and Southlands, but...
Yep.
But also... And their stuff all supports that world setting, but you can use them in any world.
Yeah, you can just drop stuff in.
There are 2 Tome of Beasts and a 3rd one on the way. But this is... And there was a Vault of Magic, which is a whole book of magic items, which people... Everybody loves magic items. This is the Tome of Heroes, which is, like, all players' option stuff. So it's got... I saw, like, Path of Bees for druids or something like that. Ooh. Like, there's all kinds of, like... Cool little alternate paths for subclasses, various classes.
You said bees?
Yep.
You could turn into a swarm of bees?
I don't know.
Yeah, at the very least, I'm sure summon a bee.
You can
probably take on an aspect of a bee and, like, sting people with magic missiles.
I only want to be a swarm.
I mean, I bet you can.
You probably can.
It's a wild shape,
I'm
going
to play this thing. This sounds cool.
But anyway, so this is all options you can drop in any campaign. So it's like 20 new subclasses for various classes. There's new
all bee-related, though, right?
They're not. They're not all bee-related.
Oh, okay. That's just the best one.
There's... I mean, it's the one that stuck with me, so...
Dave, I'll be RPG all the time.
A, always B, 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 B.
Always B, B. As Alec Baldwin explained in Glengarry Glen...
It's right there. He's a B.
Yeah, so... I haven't even opened this thing yet. That's the thing that caught my attention. But
like nothing but player options. That's pretty cool.
There's backgrounds. There's all kinds of stuff for like building characters. So if you are someone who, like my son, like most people I know, likes to build a lot of characters.
Yep.
This will give you all kinds of new options.
You know, it occurs to me, we sometimes have people coming in and they're looking to buy a D&D book for somebody as a gift or something like that.
Yep.
They don't know what they have.
Yep.
This one, because it is not Wizards of the Coast, would be less likely for them to have, or you know, but is it has production values as high as
their stuff is as good as Wizards. In fact, I don't know if we'll have it by the time the podcast goes out, but there is a limited edition like shiny cover that has the look of the alt covers that people do. So, it's great stuff. We also got a game called Make It Happen, which I think is a fashion card game.
Okay.
We got Dungeons, Dice, and Danger, which is a roll and write dungeon exploration game by Richard Garfield of Magic and King of Tokyo and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
I guess that guy
probably knows a little about games.
Yeah.
I wonder if Magic will take off, though.
I played this one. It was super fun. You have to like roll numbers, and you have to kill certain beasts before they kill you, and it's very fun.
Okay.
Trails, which is a new standalone game for people made Parks.
Yep. Parks, one of the both a... really strong game design, pretty brisk game overall, like, what, hour game or so, and, beautiful to look at, too. Mm-hmm. It's just, the aesthetics of it are super good.
Anime 5E, which is the new 5th edition basically big eyes, small mouth. Did you say, Dave? You think?
Yeah, I think which and that name may not mean a lot to everybody, but it was for decades now. It was the anime RPG.
Yeah,
like if you wanted whatever anime genre you want to do, whether you were fighting vampires in the Big Mechs, whatever, that was how you played it. And now they have a version. I think from those guys, not 100% sure, but at the very least, and a 5e rules anime RPG.
Yeah,
so that's
cool.
Check it out.
We got the G.I. Joe RPG, the Emerald Obliette Adventure and GM screen.
Yeah, looks cool.
And a new dice and dice bag too. So if you want like official G.I. Joe dice bag,
yeah, shows a cobra rattler chasing people like through a swamp and stuff. It looks
it's
cool.
A very cool piece of art.
Yep.
We got Tusk. In which you're trying to, I think you're trying to kill a mammoth before the Ice Age hits or something like that. It's a peace moving Stone Age game.
Okay.
First Rat, which is one of my favorite games I played at Gamma. You are trying to be the first rat on space.
Oh, I thought it was like
President Rat
and his first rat.
No, first rat on the moon.
Okay. Also cool.
Yeah. Cool resource management game. You've got little rat meeples, and you're trying to get to the top and get to the capsule and before the ship launches.
Let me just quick throw out a question. Any bees in this?
No bees, only rats.
I was going to say it would have been cooler with bees.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll circle back to it. I'm going to go ahead and write the guys who make it and say, like, the rats are cool. Love
How
the rat.
Second bee?
Love the rat minis, but just going to throw some ideas your way.
Yeah, Dave's bucking for his next restraining order.
Bee meeple.
We got Gargoyle's Awakening, a new game from Ravensburger, the guys who do all the Disney villainous and all that. This is their official Gargoyles game.
Yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah.
Wait, you're not talking about the Gargoyles animated thing?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, wow, that one went under my radar.
Would you like to play as Goliath?
Probably so. Gargoyles
in
was
Brooklyn,
a dope-ass show.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, or Brooklyn. Right? Anyone
yeah, Brooklyn. Yeah. They were all like at the bridge. The bridges.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure.
Goliath at the bridge?
No, he was just kind of...
Oh, I see. Your story's falling apart, Nick.
Goliath gets to be exceptional because he's like the leader, right?
Yep. He's the gravelly...
he's the super bridge.
He's the super bridge.
Who voiced him, was it? It wasn't Keith David.
It was Worf, wasn't it?
No, Worf did voice him, but I think Keith David either voiced him or he was one of the major voices.
Jonathan Frakes was the bad guy, right?
Yes.
He was.
I mean, he voiced the bad guy. He wasn't the bad guy.
He is a bad guy.
Is he? Oh,
no.
Okay.
Just his mirror universes.
We got the Marvel Legendary Guardians and Guardians 2 cinematic expansion, so all that stuff. Icons of the Realm, Pride of Fairy Dragons, little pre-painted fairy dragons.
Oh, yeah. Those are cool looking.
And then we get the Pokemon Trainers Toolkit, which is basically a starter for the Pokemon game.
Yeah, you get a pack of boosters, a bunch of other cards. I mean, like, it's cool.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk news. We have some trailers. First up, we've got the Smile trailer. This thing's creepy as hell.
Yeah, creepy-ass horror movie. Remind me of the kind of stuff that that Blumhouse does, you know, like a little bit in that vein of like...
You said it looked like The Ring versus It Follows.
Yeah, I think that's not a bad description. A psychiatrist is treating a patient who says she's, like, seeing something really weird, and it's like, it seems like... and then suddenly the patient gets this, like, creepy grin on their face, and it looks like she, like, picks up a piece of broken glass or something and, like, starts to sever her face.
Yeah.
And dies.
Yeah.
And then the psychiatrist starts looking into it and finds out that there's been, like, a rash of killings, and anybody
they're, like,
who's...
all connected.
They're connected, and, like, people who see the smiling face, like, die within a week or something like that.
I think this conceit always works really well in horror films.
Like,
you got a week to live and you have to solve it.
Right, all those tropes are kind of like, nothing in there is like that new or anything, but it looks like, I don't know, it gave off good vibes.
Sometimes
I got
window dressing is important, and if you come up with a new concept around that, it's pretty cool.
Also, I feel like the auditions had to be interesting because they had to call people and be like, give us your creepiest smile.
Yeah. There's a bit where she's walking through the hospital and she passes a room where the viewers see this, but she doesn't immediately see it. And there's a guy sitting on the edge of his bed and he's got that creepy grin on his face and he's just staring outwards. And as she passes and the camera goes with her, and then she pauses and it's clear she like caught it out of the corner of her eye, and she slowly steps back and the camera slowly goes back with her. And you're like not sure, it's like, is he going to be right there or something like that? He's not. And then she goes in and there's a creepy confrontation. But like, I can tell just from how that was filmed, that gives me a pretty good sense that these guys know how to control suspense.
Yeah.
And, like, sometimes even a little thing like that in a movie trailer can give me a good vibe off of it. I don't know for sure it'll be a good movie, but it looks at least, like, maybe better than average.
It's a really good trailer. It definitely has me interested to see it. It looks scary as hell.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, you being interested in seeing a horror movie is pretty good.
But Randy is...
I like
a horror movie if it's good. And I don't mind, like, things that are scary as long as they're good. And this looks good.
Yeah.
Harley Quinn Season 3 trailer. Dave, I don't think you ever fully got won over to this, right?
No, but I always thought it looked pretty. It was pretty good. I've seen a few episodes of it, just watched some randomly, and I've been like, that's pretty good. Not for me, but pretty damn good.
It definitely won me over. I know, Nick, you're a fan.
Oh, yeah, I'm a big fan.
Season 3 looks super fun.
Yep. I just love its weird, interesting takes, and this season looks like it's incorporating Nightwing mm-hmm. and bringing back Batgirl.
Harley's clearly got, like, so this, as someone who's kind of out of the loop on it, she's got sort of her found family
yep.
going on. Because there's, well, like, Clayface.
Season 2 ended with her and Ivy getting married.
Oh, nice. They actually got married.
They got married.
Yeah, awesome. She dumped Kite Man at the altar.
Yep.
That's maybe not cool for Kite Man, but good for Harley and Ivy.
No, good for Kite Man. He's getting his own TV show.
Well, that might be pushing it, but...
No. It's going to be great.
And so there was Clayface. Who else was in there?
Clayface, Dr. Psycho.
King Shark.
There's a plant.
There's a plant. J.B. Smoove versus the plant.
That's yes. right. That's just one of Ivy's, like, yep. giant experiments.
Yeah, and Ron Funches voices King Shark, and he's amazing.
He's so good.
The voice cast is spectacular.
So, yeah, a bunch of
Alan
Batman...
Alan Tudyk plays Clayface and the Joker, and he does an amazing job.
Oh, he does him, too.
Yeah.
This is an R-rated thing. It's anarchic. It's fun. They get to drop the F-bomb whenever they want.
Yep. Gordon's a sad man. Batman's kind of a sad man.
There's a bit where, like, what, Nightwing returns to the city and he's talking to Batman,
yeah.
and Batman's like, what's with the voice? And Nightwing's like, what do you mean? And he's like, it's a little overly serious. Because, like, Nightwing yeah. is apparently, while he's away, has kind of taken on the Batman voice.
Yeah.
And Batman seems to be like, that's my thing.
Yeah.
I love that Deidre Kader voices this Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, his Batman was always great in Brave and the Bold,
yeah.
so...
Yeah. It's super fun. I'm excited for more.
Yeah, everybody should check it out. Like, soon. It's like in a couple weeks.
Yes, a couple weeks. Yeah.
It's so good.
I think we were a little divided on the Paper Girls trailer. This is Vaughn and Chang's
adapted from the guys who, or well, the writer of Saga
yep.
and
yeah.
Why the Last Man and a bunch of other stuff, Runaways from Marvel.
I didn't think it was a bad trailer. I don't know if I've got like high hopes for it because as Dave pointed out before off mic, he was like, everything Vaughn TV touches turns to ash,
yeah.
and it's kind of true.
But also the thing that Vaughn does in comics, he tends to do weird and big.
Yeah,
and like Paper Girls had like giant tardigrades and stuff, and none of that weirdness is evident in this.
Yeah, I was trying to see who was like show running
because it starts as like a period piece. What is it, the 70s or 80s. The 80s? There's a group of Paper Girls mm-hmm. that kind of perform a club, start mm-hmm. hanging out, they're friends, and then some weird time travel stuff happens, and like life gets weird for them, mm-hmm. right? And we have to see if their friendship and all that will survive it, right. and how they will evolve as people. But and I say this as someone who kind of fell off of Vaughn a little bit. This, unfortunately, by not showing that wilder stuff you were talking about, this looks a little bit like a Stranger Things knockoff. It's yeah. just like, well, some kids from the 80s, they go and they have a time travel adventure, and it's a little bit like a little bit edgier, like Stranger Things is, but not. Yeah, it didn't look like there was enough to differentiate.
But also,
it.
Stranger Things like has great characters and personality and stuff, and it seems like they glommed onto this notion of, like, oh, they meet their future selves. And the thing is, that is part of Paper Girls, but it's yeah. not the center of it. Someone got the idea of, oh, so this is all going to be in, like, modern day 2019, and that'll be interesting to see the differences. And the thing is, that is not what Paper Girls is about. Paper Girls is much weirder.
Yeah.
And has much more time travel and different factions, and it feels like they maybe dumbed it down a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, is it possible That's they possible. Just didn't, like, they decided to... Not include too much in the trailer, so there's like more to
so dumb this down, overcomplicate Why the Last Man.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, if that's the thing, if that was the case, then that was a very dumb decision on the part of the trailer makers, because what they made is a trailer that looks super boring to me.
However, Prime does not typically do great trailers.
They don't typically do good shows either.
They're getting better.
Yeah, their average is the luck.
Real quick, what's the best three Prime shows?
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Boys.
The Boys.
Boys may be their best.
Yeah, it's one of those two. Okay.
Is there a third one?
No. I like Jack Ryan. I thought that was really
Reacher.
Well made.
I give Reacher.
Oh, yeah. Reacher and Jack Ryan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are solid. All
right.
Reacher is better than solid. I like that.
Reacher's better than Jack Ryan.
Yeah, I will agree with that. But I
anyway,
still...
but Nick, that's three shows, and they put out like three shows a week.
I heard the one... yeah, they do, and I just... I think that's weirdly, I don't get excited for Amazon shows usually. Yeah. And they kind of sit there. Like, I have not watched any of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
You should.
I know, I should. It's just other things pop up. And it kind of gets always bumped back, and I always forget about it.
Maybe you should watch that instead of Paper Girls, because Paper Girls is going to be disappointing. Anyway, I will eat my words if I'm wrong, but I'm not wrong. Speaking of things that are
going to be disappointing. I think we would like for Vaughn to have a moment. Vaughn is a nice guy. He's a talented writer.
He's doing fine. Saga just came back. He's all right.
I mean, you know, it's still
this
wish
does
the
not
man
bode
well
for the inevitability of a Saga television show. Yeah. That is just
going to be disappointing.
It's going to be like, super disappointing because
I don't know how you do Saga.
I just wonder, like, how well his writing overall translates to film. He did do some writing on Lost, which was one of the some of the better seasons of Lost.
Yep.
So I don't think that. But that was like him working on something that was created for television. How is he on adapting, or how are people adapting him? Because I don't know, how involved is he in that?
Both him and Cliff Chang are like credited as like writers and creators.
I'm like,
this,
Randy,
so.
I wish him well. Randy hopes he gets hit by a bus.
God!
I'm reading between the lines.
No.
All right.
That's what I wish for Bendis. Let's talk about another thing that looks disappointing. That's Clerks 3 trailer. Actually, it's not disappointing. It's exactly what you would expect.
Yeah, it is. I feel like Kevin Smith. I like Kevin Smith.
I like Kevin Smith. I don't want to get hit by a bus.
He just gave us a really interesting version of He-Man.
He did. He did do a good job on that. And I think that's one of the better things he's done.
And I feel
you
like
know, my
he's
favorite
us
things
like,
from Kevin Smith in the last 20 years, I'm going to say,
his
are
podcast?
His podcast, Fat Man on Batman, and what it became later.
Which is
whatever.
Literally hundreds of hours of people talking about Batman that's actually really good.
It's really good. He got literally every big person from like the guy who voices Batman,
Kevin Conroy, to Grant Morrison.
Neil Adams, Grant Morrison. Like, if he wanted them to
Frank
come
Miller?
On, they came on there. Frank Miller might be one of the few he didn't.
Yeah, okay.
Frank Miller was off, holed up in an alleyway drinking from a bottle in a bag.
With Marv?
Possibly.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. It's guesswork. Purely guesswork.
Yeah. No, it makes
based
sense.
Based on the facts.
Yeah.
But that and the He-Man, or the Masters of the Universe show... anyway, I like Clerks. Everybody in the 90s liked Clerks.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then he continued to make movies, and he made tougher to like everything.
Yep.
Clerks TV show, the animated thing was good.
Love the animated show.
I think I've seen Clerks 2, but I can't remember.
I saw Clerks 2, it's not great. It's got
but
a couple funny
moments.
Bits.
Oh, you know what, I guess I haven't
bits.
Seen it. So in this, the premise is that it's Dante and who's his buddy?
Randall.
Randall has a heart attack or something like that.
Yep.
He starts rethinking his life. They're definitely acknowledging, oh, well, these guys are old now. And
in a very meta moment, he decides to make a movie about working at the quick stop.
Yes, which includes references to like, oh, the director's cut ending where
he
shot.
He didn't work at
in
the
Clerks.
Quick stop. He worked at the video store next to the
but
quick stop.
But now he works at the quick stop.
Yeah, I know.
That happened. Clerks 2 made that.
Yeah, because video stores no longer exist. Yeah.
Man, been around long enough for whole economic patterns to change.
Anyway, this looks cute enough if you're a big Kevin Smith fan. There's a ton of inside jokes, but like, I look back at like Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, which was like such a dumb in-jokey movie.
Yes.
And I liked that one.
Yeah.
But I'm now, I don't know, 20 years past the point when I find any of that funny. I guess if I smoked a lot of weed, maybe I'd be super into it.
There are weed jokes in this one.
I'll still defend Mallrats and all.
No, I have a fondness for everything up to Jay and Silent
Randy
Bob
made me
Strike
watch
Back.
Mallrats once.
Did what? I?
Yeah.
Did you hate it?
No, it was good.
I don't remember that.
I did.
I like Jason Lee. Jason Lee's fun.
I don't remember how it came about, but it did.
Why did I use my powers for evil like that?
You're like, Mallrats is the best thing, and I love Kevin Smith, and he's never going to put out a product I don't like.
Yep.
Probably.
Yeah, everything. Basically everything past Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, it's not for me.
Right.
And that's probably been like 20 years.
I only watched that in theaters. I've never seen it since.
Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith demands the big screen.
Anyway, if you like Clerks, you'll like Clerks 3. If you like
Clerks I have a feeling that you know, even before watching the trailer, if it's for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting to watch the reaction of my friends of, like, the people who are like, oh, yeah, and the, why are they doing this? There was not much in between.
I'll probably press play when it hits the streaming service for free.
I throw this ratchet, Andy.
Yep.
Clerks 3 or Paper Girls?
Clerks 3.
I agree.
Yeah, not a good question. Because there'll be some funny laughs in Clerks 3.
Absolutely. It's going to be some dumb, funny stuff in there.
I might go the opposite because at least... I mean, I know what I'm going to get from Clerks 3. I don't know what I'm going to get from Paper Girls.
I know what I'm going to get from Paper Girls.
I have a
feeling.
Yeah.
I have a strong feeling.
Let's ask Brian Vaughn how he feels.
All right, last trailer, Day Shift. Oscar winner, Jamie Foxx.
And Grammy probably winner?
Grammy winner, Snoop Dogg.
And impresario of weed.
And MTV Video winner, award winner, Dave Franco.
Yep.
Well, he's definitely the better Franco.
I feel like this, weirdly, it reminded me of Bright in the sense that it takes a, you know, some sort of genre convention and imagines the whole world
taken over
like this way. These guys are vampire hunters.
For money.
If you've ever seen the John Carpenter's Vampires from the 90s, which is not a great movie, better book, but like fun enough idea. Hunting vampires for sort of for profit. That's what's going on. They've got cool gear and weapons and stuff like that. There's some silliness. Snoop Dogg's
in it.
He has a chain gun.
There's a chain gun involved.
This looks fun enough, but really stupid.
Yeah.
And I can't tell whether I'm going to like it or not.
Also probably a good movie to watch when you're smoking weed.
Yeah.
I would have to imagine.
Is that the theme here?
Harley Quinn would definitely be better on weed, I guess.
That's the market that's being cornered now.
I think that's good as is, but maybe made better.
Yeah.
No,
I think my weed smoking friends would probably smoke weed through Harley Quinn and everything else they watch. So I guess the question is, Paper Girls, Clerks 3, or Day Shift, which one would you watch?
I'd probably do Day Shift.
It's your Day Shift, I think. I think I'd go Day Shift.
I think I would, too, but there's just the possibility that Clerks 3, would beguile me with some good scenes. I do have some fondness for those stupid characters.
Yeah, same.
So we found the way to the pitch Clerks 3 as the alternative to shit.
Look, I would watch Clerks 3 twice before I watch that stupid Paws of Fury movie that I've seen the trailer for 4 times.
This is like when we, because Nick, you like a wide variety of movies. It's like when we go to and like try and find your lowest echelon movies and rank them from Ballistic X versus Sever to Replacement Killers.
Replacement Killers is still at the bottom of the barrel.
Nick, I've got some Nicolas Cage movies to introduce you to that they'll get below.
I know, Nick, you hit a few rough ones. I know you weren't a fan of his the dumb Chuck E. Cheese movie.
Yeah, it was just okay.
Oh, man, I guarantee you that is an Emmy winner compared to
like how you said an Emmy winner.
I'm not going to give it the Oscar.
It's a Grammy winner compared to the others.
You could have said Golden Globe, and it would have been a better joke.
No, not even a Golden Globe.
Grammy, like Roy Batty, you've seen things.
I've seen things.
You people wouldn't
believe. I got tricked into watching some terrible Nicolas Cage movies.
What do you mean,
Bangkok
you people?
Dangerous?
No, although that's probably in the same vein. I'll have to see exactly which one was Nick. But there's one that I watched that I couldn't finish. Oh no, it's that kung fu one.
The recent one.
What's it called? Jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, or
Is it called jiu-jitsu? It might be called jiu-jitsu.
I think it might be.
That is a terrible movie.
Does that have aliens in it?
Yes, that movie. It looks like the kind of thing that someone saw Predator in the reflection of a bar one night and thought they could recreate it. That is how that movie plays out. I couldn't finish it. It was so terrible.
Well, the cover art is wonderful. It has him in front of like a moon with like meteors falling.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a meteor that falls to Earth, something. I don't know. It's terrible. It's really just do not watch Jiu-Jitsu. It is the worst thing
ever. What about Prisoners of the Ghostland?
I don't know. Okay. Anyway.
Let's talk about some comics in a minute.
Star Trek Lower Decks,
yes,
is getting a comic coming in September, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I saw some of the. I think because IDW is hitting like an anniversary and putting out a special. Mm-hmm. This is sort of related, but they have a bunch of variant covers. One of which is a Lower Decks cover that looked good. Mm-hmm. I believe that art style translates well to comics. Mm-hmm. And I think it should like gag wise like Simpsons and comics like a lot of animated shows like that. If you get the pretty good writers on, they translate pretty well.
Yeah. What would be fun is if the comic is actually riffing on comic storylines from Next Generation instead of movies.
That'd be pretty funny.
But that's a meta level I don't know if they'll get to.
I also want them to do some variant covers where the characters are, like, drawn realistically.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I want the weirdness. Well, not, like, realistically with those proportions, but, like J.K. Woodward will do his photorealistic versions of what they would look like.
Yeah.
Which, since the actors are kind of in the ballpark of all their characters, and people have even talked about them, the voice actors playing the characters if they ever do show up in live action.
Yeah.
I think it's an easy hop, skip, and a jump.
I can see that. Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio are going to be in Echo on Disney Plus.
Yep.
So I guess Daredevil's a continuity, huh?
Yeah.
Let's rewind a year.
No, I don't want to. I don't want to go back to the tape.
I know you had some doubts.
I did. I was very doubtful.
You might have vociferously defended them.
I did.
But now, Yana, you
I'm wrong.
The argument's fallen apart.
I was 100% wrong. However, the thing we still haven't seen is how it all matches up in continuity. Like, is it a multiverse thing, or is it in the MCU? Because
right, well, because we've seen Daredevil in the MCU.
We've only seen Daredevil in the Spider-Man universe.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Which is the MCU.
But he's in... Oh, no, you're right. He wasn't in our universe, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He wasn't in the...
Yeah, it wasn't like off in Venomverse or something.
He didn't come in from one of the other Spider-Man.
No, he was definitely in the MCU. Yeah.
He just showed up.
I guess my only question is going to be, is the Netflix stuff going to be treated like an alternate world?
I don't think so.
Where they can do their own thing, or are they going to treat that as continuity?
I think they're going to treat it as continuity.
Interesting. My only question is, will they tolerate Iron Fist actor?
I don't think they will, but I don't know. Iron Fist is on there, right?
Or will it be the first big change that they make in something like that?
The only other one that I've heard grumblings about them bringing in... is Jessica Jones. I've heard Kristen Ritter is working a deal or something, which I'm fine with.
Mm-hmm.
She's a great Jessica Jones.
Working
actually,
a deal with what?
To bring Jessica Jones back to the MCU.
Oh, like, but is there some reason why they wouldn't?
I mean, haven't. They haven't brought anybody else in.
No, but like, she's
if they're bringing in Daredevil,
somewhere.
Theoretically, I guess anybody from those Netflix shows could show, right?
I want Mike Coulter's Luke Cage then. I want them both.
Mike Coulter's Luke Cage is good, but he's off doing evil.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Doing amazing things with evil.
Yeah.
But maybe he can find some time.
Yeah. I don't know. At any rate, I'm not sad about this. The casting was never the problem with Netflix. It was the writing.
Yeah. So putting them in an Echo series is fine.
Yeah, it makes sense.
All right, let's real quick recap for Dave. Who's Echo?
Echo is the deaf fighter person from Hawkeye.
Yep.
You didn't watch all of Hawkeye
Correct.
Series?
That's right.
But
I already
deaf,
knew that.
Fighter that David Mack and Brian Bendis created.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
She became Ronin after Hawkeye was Ronin.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Powers?
She
Mimicry?
Can read people better. She's got a little bit of that.
Like kind of like Taskmaster?
Cassandra Cain, I would say.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Sure. And so, her show is going to have Kingpin and Daredevil in it?
Yep. Because she's Kingpin's, like, adoptive daughter, sort of thing. That was all handled in Hawkeye, Dave. All
right.
You should watch Hawkeye at some point.
I think there will be some words between them after she shot him and tried to shoot him in the face.
Probably so. Maybe not. Maybe he'd be like, whatever.
Let bygones be bygones, yeah. People.
All right. Other Marvel news. Captain America 4, they signed on a director. It is the guy who directed Cloverfield Paradox. I thought, wasn't Cloverfield Paradox supposed to be terrible?
It was not amazing.
I remember people liked it.
Okay.
It was okay. I'm not excited about the prospect.
I had a weird thing where I watched 5 minutes of it and I bailed because they said it's something I thought was really dopey. And I was just like, I was so into Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield Lane,
mm-hmm.
and I liked Cloverfield well enough. And I was like, I'm willing to watch this thing that brings them together. That sounds interesting. And then it looked too dopey for me.
Yeah, I've heard rough stuff about it.
I kind of want to see it just to see whatever continuity thing they do just to tie it all together. But
not overly worried considering the fact that Marvel is so hands-on with all the directors.
Yeah.
And kind of like story-wise.
But whip only this person into shape.
Only a few people can escape that.
Yeah.
Taika Waititi being that person.
Yeah. Sony is still working on movies. They're working on Madame Web.
Yep.
Dakota Johnson is going to play Madame Web.
This movie confounds
me. They just added Emma Roberts in some
role.
Wait,
Dakota Johnson from 50 Shades?
Shades of Grey and a bunch of other things, yes.
So it's not old woman Madame Web, it's a young Madame Web.
Right, I knew that. I guess I thought...
Are they going the whole route where it's... who was the Spider-Woman from the 90s?
Jessica Carpenter.
Yeah, are they going with that version, do you
Maybe,
think? Because she became Madame Web.
She did. I don't know.
Such a weird thing. Again, this will probably be without any direct Spider-Man references.
Julia Carpenter, not Jessica Carpenter. Julia Carpenter.
This will probably be without Spider-Man, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to be somebody named Madame Web who has adventures.
Yes.
And she's like psychic or whatever.
She'll be like, the reality is like a web, and when you touch the web, you can feel it, and I can read the things, and then I also eat flies.
Yeah, she'll be like, I can sense a spidery man that lives out there.
I sense a man.
But I doubt I'll ever meet him. It sounds legal. The logistics sound complicated.
So we'll be like, you mean a Spider-Man? No.
No.
No one said that.
A man most spiderous.
No one said that.
I have, however, met Kraven and Venom.
I guess. Well, Kraven, however, my best
and it's
buddy,
Morbid
my
time.
Best buddy is my best buddy's Morbius.
I will say Kraven will be out not too long.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Did any of us see Morbius?
No. God no.
Nick, you gotta hit play for us.
Oh God.
Yeah, you have to do it.
Why?
Just don't even ask. Just do it.
Anyway, I think this is possibly might actually happen. Unlike the Sinister Six movie that I think they clearly stopped.
Yeah. That's.
There was something else where I'm like, this is never going to happen. Was it Kraven? Am I thinking Kraven's never going to happen?
Kraven's happening. Kraven's filming.
Well
right
on
now.
Its way.
I think the one that was talked about that never happened was the Silver and...
So yeah, the Silver Sable and Black Cat, which I actually... That I would have liked.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't if Sony's going to screw
I believe the thing that people were talking about lately is that Kraven is apparently going to be like a semi-decent person, like an anti-hero, where he's like environmentally minded and like
he wants animal preservation.
He preserves animals.
Listen, there's some version of it that could be fine with that, Kraven's son or something
like that. It's just
that
version's not going to be.
Yeah, also, Kraven fights Spider-Man. That's just all there is to it.
Is he not
He's
even
going to
be Russian?
I mean, no,
probably not. I don't know.
That's sad.
I mean, here's the thing. All I know is that Sony should go ahead and release Morbius in theaters a third time. Just to see what happens.
It's definitely Morbin time.
The Duffer Brothers of Stranger Things are going to adapt Talisman by Peter Straub and Stephen King. This is like more of a fantasy book than anything else, right?
Yeah, it's a fantasy book that kind of flip-flops between the real world and this other fantasy world. It's co-written by Peter Straub and Stephen King. Really, really interesting book.
When did it come out? Like 1980 or something?
Yeah, I want to say like 83.
Okay.
However, I...
Is it spooky?
No, it's more of like, did you read like Through the Eyes of the Dragon?
Nope.
Which is Stephen King's other kind of fantasy.
I've been made into.
It's really good. It kind of fits in there. It's not like horror centric. It's definitely more kind of fantasy, like questy.
Okay.
Really, really good.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I loved it.
I would like to see those talents on that. I should check it out.
It makes perfect sense that the Duffer Brothers.
How many elves?
No elves.
Son of a bitch!
All right, maybe I'll watch it.
it makes perfect sense that the Duffer Brothers. I think I read an interview with them saying that they have been talking with like King and wanting to do something, and this does make the most sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be interesting to film because it is kind of got some more magical effects. But
Is it literally like medieval type stuff, or is this like fairy tale kingdom?
Fairy tale kingdom a little bit. There's like a queen involved, and there's like a werewolfish being. I'm excited. Hopefully this will skew into the Flanagan kind of Stephen King
adaptations. They certainly seem to be doing pretty well with the latest season of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive, 4 seasons in, that you can maintain that sort of level of quality and fan following.
Yeah.
So, Amazon is also working on a Fallout TV show based on the Fallout video game. They just cast Kyle MacLachlan. As Fallout.
Mr. Fallout.
That's right.
And then there's a couple other actors who I don't know from various things. I don't know about Fallout.
As a setting, it's like a richly designed sandbox for post-apocalyptic.
I was always enamored with the first 4 hours of every Fallout game, and then I slowly kind of was like,
I kind of feel the same.
I don't care.
But arguably, I feel the same about who makes those?
Bethesda.
Of all Bethesda games, are kind of like that for me. Really, they'll really wow you early on. But unless you, I don't like leveling up characters and level grinding and stuff like that. Just never super fun for me. They are beautiful looking, though.
I think the world is really cool.
Yeah. You know what I miss? And this is why I remember when, like the difference sort of between, like, Mass Effect and, like, the Bethesda games. Mass Effect has, like, a fairly linear story with lots of, like, deep and, like, kind of rich characters.
Right.
And all the Bethesda stuff is, like, you can create very original characters, but I always feel like people talk to you very generically. Every shopkeep and, like, leader you run into is like,
there's no...
I would like for you to come help my people. Will you help the people? Mm-hmm. And it's not like...
There's no deep character.
It doesn't really matter who you are or who, you know, the various people you would, like, recruit in Mass Effect.
There's no iconic characters like Jack or Miranda or Thane or...
Right, Legion
and
all those
guys. I think it's the difference between more of a sandbox game and a story game, and I think we're all story game people.
Yeah, part of it is that, like, I play a decent number of sandboxy type games.
It's the only game you play.
sometimes that's true. like sort of, I'll play some, I guess they tend to be, like, a little bit more open world shooters and things like that. I don't know.
Yeah. It's also on Amazon, so.
I feel like, way back when, as far as, like, the earliest Fallout games, I thought it would be a cool setting for, like, a movie or TV show. It's, like, it's kind of like, it's like Mad Max, but a little more heightened. There's like, mutant creatures and stuff running around. Mm-hmm. The mythology with the vaults and all that stuff is fun. There's, I think, a dark sense of humor kind of underlying it. You got, little Pip-Boy machines and all that stuff.
We're rolling the dice on the video game things now again.
You never know. You might get a Witcher. You might get a Halo.
Borderlands
Halo.
Coming.
Halo. Yep.
We got Borderlands coming, which is a movie, right?
I don't know.
That has an impressive cast.
The crazy car driving clown.
Twisted Metal.
Also has an insanely good cast.
HBO Max has got Last of Us, which they've spent an ungodly amount of money on.
But we've also just recently seen a pretty mediocre Uncharted movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I guess we're looking to Witcher and Halo as the... To be like those guys.
Yeah, be like those.
We'll see. One last thing from Prime. They won the bidding war to get 8 Billion Genies, the new Image book. Its third issue comes out this week.
Fight for this book that only
the
has
thing is, like,
out.
Paper Girls, like, is weird. 8 Billion Genies is weirder. And if they can't handle Paper Girls...
Yeah. I will say, though, that while Paper Girls is weird, it's weirder than weird. 8 Billion Genies has a pitch that you can say in one sentence. Sure. Everybody gets single wish from a genie.
Yeah.
And
everybody on Earth at the same time starts wishing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And chaos ensues.
Mm-hmm.
So two sentences. So maybe they can get that right. Who knows?
I'll say this. I've read the three issues of 8 Billion Genies so far, and I think it accelerates well, and I really like it.
This is a mini-series, right? It's not.
It's actually going to go 8 billion issues.
Ooh, that's
one for each genie.
I think I'll probably lose interest around somewhere around 3 billion. Just
a guess. God, that 3 billionth in one issue is just awful.
Yeah, well... At 3 billion, they're going to start redoing it in color, so...
Oh, then I'm back. I'll be there for at least another billion issues. I always like, by the way, when I start a series, I like to give it at least a billion issues.
Yeah, you want to get at least a billion issues, to be fair.
Yeah, to prove itself.
Somewhere in there, though, they're going to start renumbering, though. And then they'll do a legacy numbering underneath the regular number.
Y'all are actually at 30 billion issues.
8 billion issues, negative 2 billion.
It's going to be this long-ass math problem on the
cover.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. And on that note, we're going to take a break for a second. Then we're going to come back and talk about comics the last 3 weeks. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, June 29th, July 6th, and July 13th.
Right. We're gonna fly through them, though.
This is the first time we've ever talked about three weeks worth of comics.
We've
sure
probably done it before.
We've done it
I'm not
before.
Sure about it. No. All right, the big things this week: some notable launches from Marvel, Avengers versus X-Men versus Eternals, aka Axe.
Yep.
Eve of Judgment. That's leading to their Judgment Day crossover. This is their Avengers versus X-Men plus Eternals.
Yep.
And it's written by Kieran Gillen, who you might remember from... what's he written in Marvel? Darth Vader?
He wrote a bunch of stuff. He wrote X-Men.
Eternals.
He's writing Eternals right now.
Right. And he wrote the miniseries Die.
Yeah.
Wicked and Divine.
Wicked and Divine. Yep. So he's got a pretty good pedigree.
Phonogram.
And he likes the Eternals.
Yeah.
He
does. The artist on this was somebody notable too, right?
Oh, yes. It's
Pasco Ferry.
Yeah, Pasco Ferry. Right. I was like,
so it's got that sort of photoreal, painty looking thing. Anyway, but it boils down to the Eternals are mad because the X-Men seem to be immortal now, and they're like, hey, that's our gig. Yeah. And so evil Eternal Druig is like, let's kill the X-Men.
Yep. He's got a plan right away.
And somehow the Avengers get involved. I don't remember exactly how the Avengers get involved.
They're probably like, hey, whoa, the X-Men are jerks, but don't kill them.
You're probably right. That's exactly how it goes.
Caps comes and gets him on the phone. No, he texts him.
Tying in with larger events at Marvel, the X-Men Hellfire Gala issue hits this week with a whole host of awesome-looking covers, I have to say.
So for people who missed it last year, just real quick, this is like a big fancy dress, dance, ball, get-together gala.
That White Queen puts on.
All the mutants go to get all the mutants and heroes, whoever.
They all become like runway fashionistas.
Yep, they are invited to Krakoa for the night to come and hang with the mutants.
Yeah, usually like a new X-Men team is announced. There's also some big moves on the X-Men's ability to regenerate themselves, so they cannot die. That is also a big thing here that is dealt with.
Okay.
Also, honestly, I haven't been reading many of the X-Books lately. I've just fallen out a little bit.
Do you get a little catch-up from this? A
little catch-up from this, and the state of things are not great. There's a lot of tumultuous things have happened.
You never want them to just be like, how's things on X-Men Island? And they're just like,
they're great.
It's great.
Everything's good.
But I like that some things never change. Wolverine is always Wolverine. He is kind of the badass.
Did he still dress up fancy?
He is in kind of his traditional tux with the, what are they called? The little tassel thing.
Oh, yeah.
Not a choker. It's like a...
like the little bolo thing.
Bolo, yes. And he looks awesome. He's suave as hell. All
right.
Jean Grey and Cyclops are dressed up in the awesome looking... Most everybody in here is really cool. And if you scour the internet, make a particular note of Captain America's outfit. It's probably the dopest thing I've ever seen him wear.
Interesting, because I cannot imagine fashionable Cap.
I don't know if Emma's fashion guy sent him something to wear that kind of emulated...
Cap is traditionally an artist...
Or he came up with something.
It is Steve Rogers, anyway.
It is. It's Steve Rogers. It is a badass thing. And he actually talks about Rogue, which I guess he fought originally way back when.
Well, in Avengers Annual 10, that was not Rogue's debut, but it was one of her early, certainly her breakout story, and I think her first interaction with
the
X-Men.
She punches him.
She threw him through a fence and took him out hard.
Yeah. He talks about that, which I thought was a really cool...
Yeah, that's a nice callback.
There's a lot of little nice callbacks in this, and I thought it was a great issue.
Cool.
What else we got from Marvel? Do we want to talk another
Daryl.
Big one?
Yeah, yes. So Daryl number one. This is Chip Zdarsky.
And Marco Cicchetto.
Marco Cicchetto. Dave, I think Dave took a look at this and found a thing which I'm a little worried about. Basically, this is a continuation of Chip Zdarsky's run.
Yeah, they just kind of like, because there's a big enough new direction, it gets a new number one.
So, I loved this, but I've also been on board Zdarsky's Devil's Reign. And I do think, to some extent, the only thing is that it's not necessarily, they don't explore, like, they don't do a ton of explanation of, like, what went before. They're just rolling right into expecting you to keep up with it.
Yep.
Which is, I prefer that. But I could see where it'd be a little confusing.
Yeah, there's no primer other than the fact that Daredevil's moving on from New York.
Yep.
And this is sort of a 25th hour, last night out, before he goes into sort of a new direction.
Yeah, well, he and Elektra are both going to be Daredevil, working together to take on the Hand.
Yes, which inevitably means at some point they're going to go up against Castle, which I think is amazing.
I caught that too, and I was like, oh, I hadn't thought about that.
But this is a fun sort of, there's a guest appearance from another hero in New York that I thought was
really
great.
Well done.
Who?
I'm not going to tell you.
E-Man.
And kind of dealing with the state of New York as he's leaving. And it's stuff that Zdarsky has been dealing with his entire run.
This is all like fallout from the Kingpin's mayoral craziness.
There's a little bit of that. There's also a big reveal at the end that I was not expecting.
What was it?
Not going to show, but there was
a weird thing that happens here that I was not expecting,
And if it's true, I'm a little shocked.
Yeah.
Also, there is a backup story by Zdarsky and Rafael Delator that features... Elektra and Stick.
That's really good.
And it's really cool. And also kind of expresses a different version of Elektra that we've slowly been seeing. over the course of Zdarsky's run. I don't know how Daredevil does it. He just attracts the best writers, and this may be the best thing Zdarsky's ever written.
Yeah,
I think on the really whole, good. His entire run of Daredevil has been amazing.
Yeah, interesting. Agreed. There's also Star Wars Mandalorian number one this week.
Right.
That comes to comics.
I've spoken.
Yep.
This is the way.
There's a couple new Image books. One is called Above Snakes, which is artist by this is by Hayden Sherman. It has sort of a Paul Pope-ish look. Did you guys see this? Like,
which one is this?
Above Snakes.
Oh yeah, I had that. I didn't get a chance
It's actually really nice art, and it is about a. It's a guy who is hunting the people who killed his family. But apparently there's enough of them that, like, they are, like, there's enough people like that in the Old West that they go to local bars in each town and they see each other.
Yeah.
And they're talking about how, like, they haven't found the people who killed their clan. This guy has a talking spirit raven, so there's some magical weirdness.
Okay.
It's very interesting. A lot of the selling point for me is the art is gorgeous.
My brain is like, yes, it looks like Paul Pope, but it's like Paul Pope mixed with a little of Howard Chaykin.
Yeah, okay. I can see that. Yeah.
Just, there's coloring. The coloring is cool looking, but it's also acidic, sort of.
Yeah, it's like very acidic. It looks really cool. I'm looking forward to sitting down and getting a chance to read this one.
Yeah. And then there's Impact Winter, which I know, Dave, you read.
Yes, this is the this is based apparently upon a podcast produced by Audible, the guys who did all the audiobooks. And I'm curious to check out the podcast. I thought it was a solid start to it, and it's kind of a fun premise. It's like sci-fi supernatural stuff. The Impact Winter is like a nuclear winter, but from an impact, in this case a comet, that blankets the entire world and sort of disastrous soot and ash and all that stuff. And that's when the vampires move in.
Sure.
You know, you pretty early on, you get like a overview of their vampires. And you know, it sort of reminded me in that sense of both, oh, I Am Legend, and weirdly a little bit of Dusk Till Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I thought it was pretty good. I'm curious to check out the podcast now too, which I believe this is set after the events of the podcast, I think.
Okay. There's a new book from a publisher called Black Caravan. It's written by Chris Kopiniak and illustrated and co-written by J.K. Woodward. You might remember from the Star Trek stuff, Mirror War and all that kind of stuff. This is an interesting premise. It's basically this girl's turning into a monster. She's taken in by this little Black Ops organization and put with these other kids who are also turning into monsters. And it's pitched as sort of the X-Men as if it was run by sort of military Black Ops.
Did you say what the name of the book was? I think you said the
Behemoth
company.
Behemoth is the name of the book. But it's an interesting book with really nice artwork. There's Flavor Girls, another sort of magical girls thing from Boom Studios.
Flipping through this, though, the art is really fun.
It's really
vibrant.
Super good, if you like Adventure Time and that kind of thing.
Sailor Moon.
Not Adventure Time. Princess She-Ra.
Yeah.
Yeah, She-Ra, Sailor Moon.
This
Moons.
Is going to be the same, yeah. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles launches the Armageddon game, and they have a one-shot that's the same... Christoph Waltz, I think. Is that Christoph Waltz? Tom Waltz.
But it's something like that, yeah.
The guy who's been writing it.
Since the relaunch with Eastman or
there's
whatever.
There's a, like, the Shredder's enacting some kind of, like, crazy game move with all these other crazy mutants, and it's going to impact on the Turtles. Somehow.
I always forget how involved the Ninja Turtles were with, like, alien races.
Yeah. It's actually one of the things that I like best about them is that it seemed like whatever the writer, like Eastman and Laird back in the day, wanted to indulge, you know, whether it was their sci-fi, you know, their sweet tooth for sci-fi, or for ninjas, or for robots, or for Kirby crap, like whatever it was, they folded that in there, and so they have a fun universe to play around in.
Yeah, for sure. There's also a new Overwatch, New Blood, which I think is a early days of McCree, maybe?
But he goes by a different name now?
Yes, that's right. He's Cole Cassidy.
Yes. Huh? Super good artwork in here too.
Yep.
Looks like him and Anna together.
I like the Overwatch that they did on Tracer. So, and I don't even play the games. So.
Yeah. This is a fun.
But they have a cool backstory for him.
Yep. Also, probably noting Fortnite Marvel Zero War number 2 comes out this week.
Yep. That is a big to do.
All right. Let's talk about previous weeks. I just got a bunch of stuff here we'll run through.
Yep.
Sins of the Black Flamingo from Image. This is a queer thief heisty type thing.
Yeah, it's got... I know he's like... He steals supernatural artifacts. Mm-hmm. He's a kind of a roguish type. It's more anti-hero than hero. And had really good art.
It was a fun first issue.
Yep.
Chip Zdarsky has Public Domain, which seems to be a... unapologetically taking on like how Marvel treats its creators.
I need to read this one still.
It is. I've read the first three issues because I've got some previous copies, and it is like he is talking about all the stuff about like how Stanley took a bunch of credit for things, how creators are getting movies made of their stuff, and then they're like they're not getting anything from it. Basically, it's about
is it using real names or is it like analogs?
It is analogs.
Okay.
It is basically about a character who is. Public Domain, I think, is the name of this superhero that this guy created, and he's been like the face of the company for a while, and then these rights sort of revert to him somehow, and it's all about like basically they built up this MCU level thing around this guy that he suddenly owns the rights to.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's a really good series. It is
some inside baseball from a guy who's been inside baseball.
Yeah. Yeah. And enjoyable and fun and if you know Chip.
It's, yeah, I was gonna say, is it like super serious and grim and like caustic, or is it like tongue in cheek?
It's not like Sex Criminals wacky, but it's funnier than his Daredevil stuff.
Okay,
but sure. It's an interesting.
I'm gonna guess a little darkly funny.
Yeah, there's a Vault book called Mindset that was, I think, about sort of some kind of like mind control thing.
Oh yeah, that was the one where I think some like a group of like they're either like MIT students or something like that. Yeah. They essentially come up with a code or something like that that allows for mind control.
Yeah.
And I think find themselves at the center of crazy bidding wars, people who want to steal the tech and stuff like that. And they're they're just like college students or graduate students. It sounded like an interesting premise.
There's Red Man number one, which is a local Austin artist, Matt Frank's thing. Yeah.
And it's an homage to a Japanese property from the 60s that was like kind of, it sounded like it may be a pre-Ultraman thing from what I could tell, but it was like Ultraman, a guy who like either grew giant or was giant, kind of has a little bit of that iron, or that Ultraman look with the red kind of costume, and he fights monsters.
Yep.
So if you're looking for some kaiju throwdowns, check out Red Man.
There's a new D&D Ravenloft that's based on sort of the Frankenstein mythos.
Yep.
Did you read this?
Man, there's so much stuff I didn't read last week.
This was like 2 weeks ago.
I know. I guess you were out or something like that, and it was a bit busy.
Mm-hmm. The Variants, Gail Simone's new take on Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
You know what? I read that on a whim, even though I'm not the biggest follower of Gail Simone's stuff. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a pretty good first issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remind me of the concept of this. Is her working with various versions of the multiverse?
The first issue doesn't just get to that, like, their meeting.
At the very end, yeah.
It's more of like a, kind of like a, maybe a day in her life otherwise.
Oh, cool.
Lots of interactions with her and, like,
Luke.
Friends and stuff like that. And she is, like, on a case.
Yeah.
Oh, and is this one that has Phil Noto artwork?
Yes.
Yeah. There was some good artwork. There's some fallout from some stuff with the Purple Man from back in like her like darkest of storylines. that seemed interesting. There's a suggestion. There's a fear of sort of like a post-hypnotic suggestion that
really?
Even though she's long freed from his influence,
he
may have planted something in there that somebody else who was one of his victims says, "Hey, watch out for this."
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Okay. So I don't know if she's going to use that as a way to kind of deal with like PTSD of these kind of traumatic things or where she's taking it, but it was a good first issue.
Cool.
There is Mech Strike Monster Hunters, which is the Avengers Mech Strike. And this is more Dr. Doom has like some kind of crazy monsters.
I know that they get into like supernatural armor suits in this one.
Yeah.
Honestly, Dr. Doom having a giant armored mech suit does not shock me. It's probably magic fueled.
We're actually sold out of this right now, but there'll be more coming back. And that is Chip Zdarsky's Batman, which started with Batman 125, which is
highly popular.
and an interesting kickoff. He offs a major character.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting character. I don't know if how much it'll take. You never know these things over time. It could even be in a mislead, but it sets some interesting chain of stuff in motion.
And I've actually read a digital copy of the next part of this, and it definitely picks up in interesting ways.
Okay.
So, yeah.
What's interesting is like Batman is also teaming up with was it Tim Drake Robin is mm-hmm. like his back is as the formerly as the Robin in this one, and there's elements that are both kind of like old school like that where I feel mm-hmm. like he's like kind of wanting in some ways a pretty classic Batman adventure, and there's definitely other elements that are pushing it forward into kind of new territory, mm-hmm. and it's an interesting place to be at. I think it might be good a good thing for the character.
Agreed.
But what else we got?
The final issue of Joker, Tinian's Joker,
oh, right.
number 15.
A.K.A. the Jim Gordon hunting the Joker mm-hmm. book.
Black Adam Justice Society Files Hawkman. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a few of these. I think there was one that's for Cyclone. I think it was another
that
one.
That one's coming up. I don't okay. think that yeah, one's just yet.
So basically they're going to introduce all the characters who are going to be in the Black Adam movie. Yep. I think in one shots. This title's long. Starhenge Book 1, The Dragon and the Boar, number 1.
This is Liam Sharp's new book.
Liam
right?
Sharp's like weird Euro sci-fi thing.
Liam Sharp,
but in a shorter version, you could call it Starhenge, yes. like Stonehenge, but spacey.
Mm-hmm. Liam Sharp was best known lately for working with Morrison on Green Lantern.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And also, didn't he work with Rucka on Wonder Woman for a little while?
I think that's right.
Yep.
I flipped through it. It was gorgeously painted artwork.
Yeah. Yeah, I just had a customer who picked it up today and was hyped for the second issue to come out.
Yeah.
I think, Randy, I think you called it when you said it looked like sort of like the Euro sci-fi of like Mobius and those yeah. kind of guys.
Yeah.
So if that's something that intrigues you or just the art side of it draws you in, check it out.
There's a book from Ablaze that's called Promethe 1313, written by Andy Daigle, artist Sean Martinbro. And it seems like basically there's a... The hour, it says September 2019, the hours is 13:13, and the next 12 days the world will change forever. I don't know what happens. It's a weird, like, somebody's hallucinating, maybe there's a weird biblical thing, and they send off, like, they send a ship out into space. It's a weird, like, something is happening in the world kind of thing.
Okay.
It feels like a blockbuster movie kind of premise. There is Prodigy, the Icarus Society, which is more of Mark Miller's like smartest guy in the world.
Right. I know he is now opposed, I believe, by a whole like legion or not legion, but a group of like also super intellects to match him.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be like you know, just kind of knowing what I know about Miller. You know how Batman like has like a plan and a contingency for everything? Mm-hmm. I know he likes to lean into that and sort of run it as like a thought experiment of like, well, what does that really mean? How would you be ready for everything? What would you do? And so it's going to be like one guy who's the best at it versus like a whole group of people who are super, super good at it. Anyway, you know, it's Mark Miller. You know, you like his speed or you don't, I think.
Yeah. There's a book from AWA by Peter Milligan and Mike Deodato.
Okay.
It's a great creative team. It's called Absolution. It looks like kind of a cyberpunk bounty hunter book. I can't quite get the sense of it, but it's interesting to look at. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it felt very kind of Blade Runner-ish a little bit. Yeah, but it's Deodato's artwork is always great.
Dark Horse presents Mind Management Bootleg, which is... Mind Management was this sort of, trippy psychic secret agents book that Matt Kent wrote. Now he's got Farrell Dalrymple on art, which has this weird sort of, like, art house vibe to it.
Yeah, it's nice looking, but it is weird, too.
It's like a kid who's looking into this psychic detective agency thing.
The original Mind Management was bonkers.
It was. It was also really good.
It was.
This one looks interesting and also really, really pretty.
Probably should mention Lore Olympus Volume 2.
I was getting to that.
Yeah.
There was Lore Olympus Volume 2 came out.
Yeah.
Hardcover, softcover.
One of the absolute breakout webcomics of the last few years. Mm-hmm. And I think when I made the sign for it, it's kind of a Greek gods after dark kind of thing. It's sort of romance and dark machinations and stuff like that. But very much with a kind of a stylish, fashion-y sort of twist, I guess I'd say, to it. It is... not diving deep into the mythology so much as it is their kind of nightlife personalities. Mm-hmm. As that sense, it's almost got like a bit of a soap opera vibe to it, but kind of with there's like a darker edge and somewhat more raunchy too.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I like the first volume of it. It is like I said, literally one of the best loved webcomics. So, if you like that first volume, at long last, the second one is here.
And it came out the same week as the long-awaited Last Ronin hardcover.
Oh, right, right, yeah. Ninja Turtles in a dystopian future, or Ninja Turtle.
Mm-hmm. The Last Ronin.
The Last Ronin. I kind of want to read it now that it's all out. I was just kind of very casually aware of it when it was going, but sometimes I feel the turtle mood.
That's all the stuff. There's a bunch of stuff this week. Like, there was a new issue of Moon Knight. There was a new issue of
Punisher.
Spider-Punk, Punisher. All the, like, really good Marvel stuff came out this week.
Third issue of Rogues.
Third issue of Rogues.
Superman, the Son of Kal-El. Oh, let's mention the DC versus Vampires thing real quick.
Oh, yeah, the DC versus Vampires, right, right.
So that's a miniseries that's, like, going to be 12 issues long. It's written by James Tynion, who's been making name all over the place lately with Batman
under the
and
radar,
stuff.
Though.
But he's only co-writing. Matt Rosenberg is
right.
the writing.
But I believe probably keying off the success of Deceased, mm-hmm. their Vampires mm-hmm. thing, or Zombies thing, this is a, you know, the DC, you know, big chunk of the DC universe shown in conflict with vampires. And, you know, you find it's halfway through, and it's sold out, so you can't find it. So they put out these two thick thick little comic compilations. There's one of issues one through three, and there's one of 4 through 6, mm-hmm. which would basically get you caught up.
And number 7 came out last week, and we still have one.
Yeah.
Don't they call them the Coffin Edition and the Crypt Edition?
Yes,
I believe
that's
yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, it's neat. It is a good series. I don't think it's as good as Deceased. But I think
it's
what I've read is good. You're going to get to see a lot of DC heroes, from Damian. Like, how does Damian, this killer little kid, go up against vampires? Well, you'll find out.
I think it was one of those where the first issue was just okay to me.
Yeah.
But the second issue...
When it got to the Bat Family stuff...
It hit some high highs, and then has really never kind of let up off the gas, honestly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if any of that sounded appealing to you, you should check this one out.
Yes.
Yep. All right, that's our comics of the week. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about Black Phone and Thor: Love and Thunder. All right, so spoilers if you've not seen Black Phone, which I have not seen,
yep.
So I'm going to tune out a little bit while you guys talk about it.
We're going to do this first and then Thor.
Let's talk about that, and then we're going to do spoiler warning for Thor, Love, and Thunder. So
talk
about Black Phone.
So Black Phone is the new sort of horror thriller by Scott Derrickson and C. Robert Cargill. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, he's the guy who wrote Doctor Strange and Sinister.
They
co-wrote
and direct.
Together. Yeah.
And this is sort of adapting a Joe Hill novella.
Okay, it's a novella.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a it's a period piece. It's what, late 70s?
Late 70s.
And I get a strong sense that this is, you know, parts of it are derived from Joe Hill's childhood.
Yeah.
Just because of the era, for one thing. And I don't think he was necessarily kidnapped by a scary goblin masked man.
I don't think so.
But I suspect that with Stephen King as his father, the part about the alcoholic, angry dad was at least sometimes quite true.
You don't think Stephen King galloped about the house in a weird kind of a mask that's scary?
That's possible.
Yeah.
This movie has, even before you get to like the kidnapping stuff, there's a creepy guy who's like in this town. I guess
it's
a small town.
It's a small town
called the Grabber. Shows up in a black van that has like black balloons mm-hmm. in the back of it, and like kidnaps children to unknown ends. And that's sort of the backstory. But even before you get anywhere, you see this kid who's like bullied in school, and in a kind of harsher way than you maybe sometimes see in movies.
It's...
and has a
he's
I'm not going to say
nerd.
Super violent dad, but a at least angry alcoholic dad who's sometimes
abusive
with he and his sister.
Played by, it was just on the tip of my tongue. He was in Lost, Jeremy Davies.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Honestly, he does a great job playing a character who is a piece of shit, but has a bit of depth to him.
Yes. There's a reason he's a piece of shit.
Right.
I will also say that I think you're going to disagree with this assessment, but it has, like, little tinges of, like, Stand By Me. Just with, like, the characters and the kids and their relationships with one another. I thought they did a great job with the brother and sister. The main character and her sister.
I agree. The interaction was really good. And I think even... So I didn't like this movie as much as you did, but I thought it was a good movie. And I agree even with some of the Stand By Me stuff. I think that when it was at its best, is kind of when the characters feel the realest.
And our main character's best friend.
And you see these two kids that are kind of trying to deal with the trauma of having an alcoholic dad. Like, it's that part's pretty real.
Yeah.
And played very real.
I loved the main kid's friend who sort of watched out for him.
Kind of an unusual kind of character.
Sad, but,
right. Playing a little bit against type, he's like... a Mexican kid at the school who's not like super buff or anything.
No, but he knows martial arts,
and he's like he's not like a nerd himself, but he's like he's kind of like a little bit like a jock.
Yeah,
but like a kind of like an unusual jock,
like an anti-jock kind of way.
An anti-jock jock.
I loved his conversation in the bathroom with him about he's like I. You should come over and watch Bruce Lee's Enter the Dragon. And he's like, I one day long to watch a Bruce Lee movie because they don't watch movies.
Right, right. That's right.
Their home life is kind of abysmal in a lot of ways. Yep. But I also liked the sister and her character. She's a little against type. She's a younger kid.
She's kind of a little foul-mouthed.
Foul-mouthed and very precocious.
Yep.
She also has an ability.
And she, yes, she does. She has some sort of supernatural psychic-y thing going on.
And that definitely plays a big role in the movie.
And I think this is like built into the premise, so although we're trying to avoid major spoilers for Randy, this kid gets kidnapped by the Grabber.
Yeah.
Played very well by the creepy, as always, Ethan Hawke.
Yes.
He's actually he's a great actor all around, but if you've seen him in, Moon Knight recently, right?
Yeah, Moon Knight.
He did quite a good job as the cult leader guy.
Yeah, forget his name. But he is, as always, committed to the performance.
Yep.
And him as this sort of vindictive child killer. I mean, there's no way around
there's
that.
There's no way around it.
He also gives kind of a weirdly nuanced performance.
Yeah. He is neither, you know, he's not like a Hannibal Lecter genius.
No.
Nor is he like some Jason just like slash, slash, slash. He's a person who like holds them and sort of waits for like the right time and sort of almost like tries to stage incidents and things like that. And, you know, I don't think we need to dive too much deeper into it other than to say that there's an interesting supernatural element or something element, which you will learn what the deal is. In the sense that the room the kid is held in has a phone attached to the wall, the black phone of the title.
Yep.
And it has the cord cut. But that doesn't stop it from ringing.
Correct.
I don't think I really want to get into that at all, like exactly what the deal is. But it's interesting, and like it shows that, you know, Hill's imagination, I think.
Yeah.
There's not really anything else quite like it.
I like when movies show kids as not being dumb.
Right. This is a fairly inventive kid.
But not like super smart, but definitely kind of like not just sitting there crying, actively trying to do something about the situation he's in.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that. Also, I just appreciated this has a lot of heart. I mean, it's a weird thing to say about a horror movie, but there's a really good story here, and I was very impressed with it. I liked it more than Sinister. Which I know, I think
I'd flip that,
you.
Yeah.
But I really...
Of the two, it's certainly, like, it has more heart. There's just no doubt about it. Sinister, which also had Ethan Hawke in it, playing a really not such a good dad.
No, he
there
was, like...
There may be a recurring theme to these movies from Cargill.
I'm trying to remember Sinister. It was like a...
He was a
work at it.
He was a writer who had not had a hit in a long time, and it was like the family was running into money troubles, and
moved into a house.
He had become kind of embittered, but without telling his family, he does like true crime stuff. He moved into basically a house where murders had happened,
and then finds
he finds like snuff film type stuff in the attic of the murders, and there's also some supernatural elements. But anyway. Different movie.
If you get the chance, I'd watch The Black Phone. It's definitely worth it.
Our other coworker, Serena, who is also a big horror nerd, mm-hmm. like you and I both are, she may be more so, I would possibly say.
Maybe so.
She and her partner really liked it, I know, too. So, And the person I saw it with really liked it. And arguably, I'm the person who liked it least, and I still thought it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty clear recommendation.
Cool.
If you like the stuff on the thriller or horror side, it's worth your look.
Shall we move on to Love and Thunder? All
right, let's give our spoiler warning again. If you haven't seen Thor: Love and Thunder...
Total spoilers coming.
We're going to spoil everything. I'm curious, Nick and I, you and I have not talked that much about this. I'm curious where you land on this. Did you like it? Did you love it? Did you hate it?
I loved it.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. I'm in that weird spectrum that I just fell in love with it from minute one. I think Christian Bale is a weird protagonist and kind of antagonist.
You know, weird in what sense? Because I thought, I think he was a good villain, just to start with. And
he was
with a somewhat unusual motivation, which I found out only, but I haven't read all of the Jason Aaron run, or any of it, really.
Most people who love that run are going to say that this is a bastardization of that character.
But I was fascinated by this guy who's, I think we can say, because it's kind of, we're doing spoilers.
Full spoilers.
This guy on some other world, which is like this, looks like this wasteland, maybe forgotten by the gods of that world, and he's trying to protect his daughter as they're both like wasting away, and she doesn't make it, and he prays and he's not heard, and she dies, and then he finds this kind of like oasis that's like where one of the gods is residing.
Well, I think the sword calls him to that.
Oh, is that it did? But there is a sword there that, like, can kill gods. And this guy, the god, is sort of, like, taunting him and laughing at him. He's like, oh, you thought you were going to get absolution or I would revive her or something? He's like, that's not how the gods work, man. And he manages to get his hands on the sword, and then it's bad news for the god. Then it's bad news for all the gods, because he's vowed to, like, take them all down.
The sword is weird. I was kind of surprised that they actually did it. It is the Necro Sword.
Yep.
Which is Knoll's sword.
Oh, interesting. For people who don't know, Knoll is the god of the symbiotes,
which
from,
makes kind of the
Venom
shadow creatures and all that have kind of an interesting bent.
Huh.
I was surprised.
We'll see if they ever follow up on that or if it's just
I think Knoll could be fun.
Dave, I think you and I both liked but did not love this.
I think I'd agree with that. I've reassessed it in my head a few times. There was definitely elements I liked, but sort of what I was kind of worried about and was hearing a little from advanced screenings, which is that it's like, oh, it's like Thor Ragnarok, but more. It's like Thor Ragnarok, but a bit more uneven.
Mm-hmm.
All of that stuff. And I was like, that's all true.
And the thing is, like, I didn't love Thor Ragnarok. And so for
you've
me...
You've warmed up to it a bit, but
I've warmed
still,
up to it, but it's still not... I don't love it as much as everybody else loves it. Yeah. And I thought this was lesser than Thor Ragnarok.
I think we're... maybe I'm wrong, but maybe we're looking at Ragnarok with kind of rose-tinted glasses because it was so unexpected for what it was. And it really is just Taika Waititi running rampant.
That's what this whole thing is like, this whole thing is Taika Waititi making jokes.
Waititi is, though, he reminds me of James Gunn. He's a guy who, they both are guys who like to use humor and tuck away some serious dark drama at the heart of it. Mm-hmm. Even in somewhat similar ways, arguably, this bears some similarity to the sad stuff, cancer-related stuff, in the first Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
But he is a guy who likes to goof around a bit.
Oh, yeah.
But at the heart of it is, like... Thor's broken off relationship with Jane, which he clearly... I like that they went back and said that, oh yeah, even that the it was big in the first two movies. Ironically, kind of nothing in his third movie.
They broke up between Avengers.
Right. Yep. And then I thought they were just going to be like, well, yeah, it's just one of those things, just like how Batman breaks up with every one of his things, and then you don't have too many like long-lasting romances and things. But no, they circled back to it in this one and are like, oh, it actually is meaningful to him. And I liked that idea that they could rediscover each other. I kind of like the idea. It's not something you see too often, which is like a couple that essentially breaks up in a film series, and then like years later, 6-7 years, what's it been?
Thor's
been counting it.
8 years and like five days, hours.
They sort of find each other again, and not like immediately in a perfect way. And I liked all that stuff, as well as I thought, like, in some ways I thought the best scene for me was the more dramatic scene, well, with a little comedy of where Jane, early on, Jane Foster, mm-hmm. Natalie Portman, where she's getting chemo, very mm-hmm. real, and her friend Darcy, who everybody knows from the Thor movies and WandaVision. she's there with her and is kind of like, wow, this is pretty serious. She's like, maybe you ought to tell some other people or whatever. And she's like, nah. And she's like, I'm only on stage 4. And she's like, how many stages can there be? And like, Darcy's like,
4.
It's 4. And it was that was this thing where like it both mixed kind of like some comedy, but also kind of like some sort of grim denial stuff. Yeah. And
they gave Natalie Portman more to do here than she's ever had.
Oh,
right.
100%. That said, I still didn't think it was enough. I still think she had to play second fiddle to Hemsworth, and I would have liked a little more balance for her.
Yeah. Well, that, and the fact that, like, it does seem like in any given conversation, you were always one sentence away from somebody quipping.
I will also say, I don't think we're done with her in the MCU.
We'll see. I don't know.
That stinger, I mean,
I thought the stinger was just to give her the happy ending.
Oh, I don't think so.
I mean, in a large part, I'm sure this depends on did she have a good time with it,
right?
Since we're spoiling everything, her character dies in the end.
She
goes to Valhalla,
but she does go to Valhalla. But yeah, she kind of has to do that thing because like using the Thor power is continuing to like make her body sort of atrophy.
Yep.
But she does sort of some big sacrifice stuff.
Yep.
If you happen to be a Viking type person, you get to go to Valhalla.
If you die in battle.
Yes. There's a bit of funny stuff like where Sif, I guess,
gets like, one of her arms.
And she's like, he's like, well, if I kill you now, you won't go to Valhalla. You survived the battle.
I was so glad to see Sif.
Yeah,
it was
such a nothing role, though.
But the thing is that she's still around.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy that she is. Warriors 3 got it the worst. And the joke in here of Korg being like, and that guy, and that guy.
Yeah.
And I was damn.
I think my big disappointments in the Thor movies are the Warriors 3 have never gotten their due. And we're 4 Thor movies in. Where's my goddamn Beta Ray Bill?
I mean, I'm not going to argue with you. I assume he's coming at some point.
How is Taika Waititi not doing Beta Ray Bill? It seems right up his alley.
Maybe that's the next one.
There was apparently a 4.5-hour cut of this movie.
I know. I thought Russell Crowe's Zeus was fun, but again, a little too goofy.
Overstayed his welcome.
Overstayed his welcome. And the thing is, like, there's a movie. There's a version of this movie that I would love. Like, the chemistry between Valkyrie and Mighty Thor and Thor and Korg is great.
Yeah.
I even liked all the stuff with the kids. Like, when they gave the kids the Thor powers, thought that was my favorite moment of the whole movie.
It was really cool.
And I thought that could have been doofy as hell, and I thought they did a good job with it. I like turning Thor into a dad. I think that's a really cool status quo that we've never seen before. But, and Hemsworth plays goofy, sort of doofy Thor better than anybody else. Like, they found his gear.
Yeah.
But I have never liked Thor as much as I like him in Avengers Endgame and Avengers Infinity War, and that's a problem.
You like Thor the way I like Doctor Strange.
Yes.
Guest star.
Yes. I think that's the thing. I don't like Thor. And this should have worked because it's Thor as a team, so he isn't. It is a guest starring role, but he is still front and center. And I don't think he's that interesting to hang a story on.
Yeah.
One of the things I liked in it, and this is a Taika Waititi thing, is the broad sense of inclusiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, arguably with Valkyrie in there, you have more people of color, more queer theme. That's like going to be in all of his stuff, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Although Sif lost an arm, you do see her at the end of the movie, training kids, fighting. She's a one-armed swordsman, and I was like, that's cool. Let's see. Oh, Korg, right? Korg.
Yeah.
He gets a boyfriend or a husband or something like that.
Did you notice the name of his boyfriend?
Yes, I thought that was stupid.
Yeah. I didn't catch it at the moment, but Serena's like, his name is Dwayne. He's a rock. I'm like, God damn it.
Son of a bitch. Get that shit out of here. No, it's... I'll allow it. I mean, it's no dumber than a bunch of the other stuff.
No, dumber than most of the rest of the stuff in the movie, yeah.
Let's see.
The goats. We didn't talk about the goats.
Tooth Gnasher and Tooth Grinder. They were amazing.
The screaming goats.
Where does he get those? Those are a gift from the weird aliens up front, aliens, not the usual mythological.
He destroyed the palace.
Weirdly, that both set set the tone that told me I was not going to love the movie.
Yeah, yep.
I thought when Thor walked up and there's like the Guardians are fighting people and there's like probably people dying, it seems like, and Thor is like narrating it in a very kind of intentionally goofy way, like very full of himself.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is going to be Thor is going to be a caricature in this kind of movie. Even though they will also do some serious stuff. Like, I like the montage of him and the rise and fall of his and Jane's relationship, yep, as seen in the montage and, yep, expanded on from the other movies. Because, you know, like, you see them, like, going out on dates, and he's, like, it's for Halloween, and he's, like, wearing, like, what, a giant hot dog costume?
Yep. Yep.
Did she have a chest burster costume? Like, an alien thing?
I don't remember.
It looked like there was something on her chest that I couldn't tell what it was, and I realized it was, I think, like, a homemade version of, like, an alien chest burster. Anyway, what else? What else? Anything else to say about it?
This is a stupid thing, but I actually liked the relationship with the Hammers. It was such a dumb thing.
That overstayed its welcome for me. It was too obvious.
What you're talking about, Nick, is when Thor will, like, talk to both his
Mjolnir and Stormbreaker,
and he kind of talks to them as if they're people, and, like, he's kind of been, like, seeing another woman. He's like, "Don't worry." He's like, "You're still the apple of my eye, and I will
give
be back
him his
for
first
you."
Beer.
Yeah,
it was dumb. I'll give you that. I still laughed.
Yeah, in retrospect, this movie might be losing a star.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I liked it. The only time that worked for me is when he was, like, they were about to leave the village, and, like, he turns and Stormbreaker's, like, floating up to him. And that I thought was funny.
like following him?
Yeah.
They also weaved good concepts even in that, because him talking to Mjolnir actually was the reason why it went to Jane, because he inadvertently cast a spell on Mjolnir to save her.
I thought that was a neat idea.
And I thought that was a really cool idea, and that Mjolnir was able to come back together for Jane after being destroyed
by Hela. When I was watching
Hela,
and in the moment,
also the effect.
I generally had a fun time, like, with it. Like, it's a fun kind of party movie.
It's fun.
And I think it's, like, fun if you don't take it too seriously. But weirdly, like, I kind of wanted to take it more seriously.
I think that's the thing. It's like, again, this is not a fair comparison, I know, because it had 20 movies to build it up. But I look at Endgame.
Yeah.
And it is fun. It's got some goofy stuff in it. But there's heart and there's, like, moments. Like, really.
Well, what about, like, the third Spider-Man movie? We're now on essentially what's the fourth Thor movie.
Yeah.
So, and the third Spider-Man movie got to be very heartfelt and serious.
Yeah. There is a mix. There's a mix to be had of that humor and that heart. And I feel like Watiti's heart stuff is not as strong as I'd like it to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, I felt like that with his Jojo Rabbit stuff, too. Yeah. What I wanted was, like, some of that stuff that was, like, basically when the Spider-Men met in Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
Was it No Way Home?
Yeah.
I think I wanted a little bit more of those moments.
And we're supposed to be getting, I mean, those moments are in here. We're supposed to get, like, when Jane makes the decision to call Mjolnir and sacrifice herself, that's supposed to be a big thing. But it's all sort of undercut by the jokes.
Right.
And it doesn't have the weight that I think it wanted to.
Yeah.
And, like, him giving the kids the powers was cool, but he's been an arc now where he was, like, not worthy of the hammer, all the way now to where he is basically Odin and the forefront of the symbol of Asgard. And then making him so jokey, he rarely earns that.
Yeah.
And I feel like they haven't done a great job of, like, giving him why he is so worthy, why he's one of the best heroes, that kind of thing. And
it'd be nice if they could have dug a little deeper into that.
I think that
sort of that could have worked, because you kind of see what Jane sees that maybe his goofy persona doesn't always reveal.
Yeah. Well, when he gave the kids the power of Thor, that was very much an Odin kind of move, and it's not dissimilar to what he did with Mjolnir. And there's, like, all this stuff is there, but you have to do the extra work to assemble it yourself later.
Instead of being
in the movie.
It's like the good Odin and not the Odin that did the kind of shady stuff.
Yeah.
That would have been an interesting point to make, is that, like, oh yeah, you are breaking some of the rules that your dad, you're doing some better stuff than he did.
By the way, this is a jokey thing, but I love that Matt Damon and what's his, and the other Hemsworth. No, who's the Hemsworth?
Oh, yes, Liam.
Liam?
Yep.
That they returned as the playwrights, and they delved a little more into that. They're like, she didn't say not to make this.
Did you also see who else was in New Asgard?
You mean Melissa McCarthy?
Well, yes, she showed up, but Daryl was there, too.
Yes, I did catch that Daryl was there. Yes.
Daryl?
He's from the shorts.
He was the roommate
of
Thor.
He was Thor's roommate, and then he was Grandmaster's roommate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nick, I also did enjoy the Shrieking Goats, even though it's weird to reference a meme that's like 10 or 15 years old now. But I did crack up every time.
Yeah, I did too. As Kaylee will protest, she was like, "It's not that funny." I'm like, "It's funny. I don't care."
No, Kaylee's right. It got old for me real fast. But also, this had no impact on Dave. But I was very happy that they cast Hercules, and it's Roy Kent.
Yes, it's Roy Kent. He looked cool. I'm excited.
Roy Kent from blank.
From Ted Lasso.
Okay. I also just liked where this ended with Thor. I think him trying to be a better version of Odin as a dad.
Yeah.
And maybe kind of writing some of the mistakes that he had.
There's a lot of potential here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, he was clearly, like, enjoying his life as a dad.
Also,
yeah.
His Loki tattoo was very sweet.
I didn't catch the Loki tattoo.
It's on his back.
Also, Eternity looked cool as hell.
Eternity was cool.
Yeah, that was one of those that's like, man, that's like a straight-up visualization of how he looks in the comic.
Yep.
They kept him as like this sort of silent, you know, a cosmic entity, and I think that was okay. I didn't need to hear him speak. Yep. But the way they did the Starfield and stuff behind, you know, that made him up looked really dope.
In that hallway, there was also a statue of Living Tribunal.
Yep, saw that.
And one of the Celestials, which I'd never know their names.
Or Shem or something like
that. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. So there was a lot of like world building here, and I'm sure there's millions of little Easter eggs in that scene.
Yeah,
I
liked this fine. It was fun. I was telling Dave after we watched it. The thing is, like, the last Marvel movie that got me was Endgame. Like everything since there hasn't been a movie since that has like grabbed me. Like Black Widow, Eternal, Shang-Chi, this Doctor Strange. I've liked all of them. Except maybe Eternals. But I haven't loved any of them. And that's a bummer for me as such a fan of the MCU.
And I view them a little like comics. I know that's weird because, I mean, it's not 100% weird. But I feel like every one of them has been good to great in the Phase 4.
Yeah.
I don't think, even Eternals, I still really enjoyed.
Yeah.
I need to go ahead and see it.
Always waiting for the creator, like the Russos, or somebody to take these ideas and really build them out into something more.
I still have hope that they're building to something, that this is like just like the original. I mean, the original Iron Man is pretty great, but like the original Thor, the original Cap, they're not quite there.
No, because
I have
all
a
of these,
for all of those.
Yeah, all of them were good. I know people will say Thor Dark World was bad, but it's kind of been elevated because it is so important to things like Endgame. Yeah. And
it's
if you don't
have... It's still the worst Marvel movie, though.
I mean, I'm not going to... Iron Man 3 might
incorrect.
Be the worst.
Yes.
Yeah, entirely
followed by Iron Man 2.
No.
Iron Man 2 is definitely worse than Iron Man 2.
Iron Man 2 is actually pretty high.
How low do you put Eternals, which I haven't seen yet?
Oh, man, it's down there.
It's mid for me, but I'm
I think I like hanging out with semi-serious Thor, and so there was enough good stuff in Thor Dark World for me to enjoy.
Well, my list is completely negated for you because I actually Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is pretty like in the higher echelon.
It has dropped. Every time I've watched it, it's just dropped for me.
I've only watched it the once though, so
yeah,
I can't.
When you rewatch,
I've only
think,
seen it once.
Yeah,
oh, I think when you rewatch it, it's going to drop in your estimation a little bit.
I think I like Sam Raimi more than you.
Yeah, that's true.
So
anyway, I mean, Marvel TV is where it's at for me, and I'm still liking the Marvel TV a lot more.
Well, and tomorrow we're going to get the finale of Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, which has been great.
And then what's after that?
She-Hulk in August.
Okay, so not too much farther.
Yep.
Maybe people will shut up and just agree to like the CGI. maybe they fixed it, I don't know.
Maybe. But anyway, that's our thoughts for the week. It's a big, giant, long podcast.
Yep.
And we'll be gone next week, and then we'll be back the week after, hopefully.
Yep.
For another giant size.
Probably. and until such time,
yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.